Welcome, everyone, to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. I hope everyone is enjoying their day so far. It is a gorgeous day in New York City. I hope that you're enjoying your day wherever you are. And as always, we are armed and ready to serve justice with all my great listeners here on the Red Apple Audio Network. There's so much that happened this week in America, but I have to tell you, there is one thing that happened that is so monumental that I'm going to go right into my opening as soon as I tell you who the guests are going to be on the show today. Later in the show, I'm going to be speaking with U.S. Representative, our Congresswoman Claudia Tenney from New York. We're going to talk about the new bill that has passed and what it means, the gun law, and how they got to this agreement. And we're also going to be talking to one of the country's premier security experts. His name is Wayne Black. He's written an article on the Uvalde school shooting that is so common sense, folks. He is the kind of guy where, you know, this is real simple. You don't need a lot of emotion. These are the facts. This is what we do. Those are the lies. And let's get to it. So it's all coming up in just a few moments here on the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. But I want to talk about a very, very important moment that happened this week in a case that literally arose out of New York that got to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court rendered its decision in the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association against Bruin, the superintendent of the New York State Police. This case has been winding its way up to the Supreme Court. And just this week, the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision, announced that in the United States, and don't let New York throw you off, this is about the whole country. In the United States, the American people can carry concealed weapons outside of their home. The Supreme Court struck down the New York gun law that had been affirmed by the Second Circuit under Andrew Cuomo that had a requirement that in order to carry a concealed weapon, you had to show a unique need for self-defense distinguishable from the general community. And the general permits, gun permits that are being granted in New York, and I was a judge, I used to sign pistol permits. They were generally for hunting and target shooting. And yet New York passed a second requirement and said, hey, if you want a concealed carry, you better give us a good reason, and not that you're afraid of being robbed or you're afraid of being attacked if you're on the street. And they call that the proper cause clause requirement. And the Supreme Court said, no way, folks. The Second Amendment is clear. The Second Amendment allows the people of the United States to bear arms, and that means to bear and carry arms. It's not just in the home, it's where they are. Now, 43 states in this country require that you get a permit, so they didn't lessen or lighten up any of the laws as it relates to getting a gun, but what they said is, hey, you can't then just say, now, if you want to actually carry that gun as a concealed carry, you have to show us why. Well, you can't say, I think I'm going to be attacked on June 29th at 3:00 in the afternoon in Times Square or anywhere else. So the Supreme Court decision, written by Justice Clarence Thomas, 6-3, was a full-throated Second Amendment defense, and it was so clear where they said nothing in the Second Amendment draws a home public distinction with respect to the right to bear arms. Now, you remember, I talked to you about Roe versus Wade, but I want you to compare this decision on guns, where the court said, the Second Amendment is clear. It is the right to bear arms. And they said this constitutional right and the exercise of this right does not require the individual to demonstrate to some government official a specific reason why they want to carry that gun. And by the way, remember when they said the history of Roe versus Wade? They said there's nothing in our history that says you're entitled to an abortion. That same test is being applied here. where the Supreme Court said, let's look at the history and tradition of the United States. That's part of the thinking. And they said it is an enduring American tradition that allows and permits a public carry. And this is the one of the biggest decisions, folks, in the last 10 years, and one of the big three decisions on guns and the Second Amendment, in addition to Heller and McDonald. The government has to justify why they want an excuse or a reason, and the Supreme Court said, not so fast, Jack. That's not what the Constitution says. But I want you to hear what the ladies of The View think, those brilliant women, Whoopi Goldberg in particular.
It seems, I don't even have the words, it seems
stupid.
No, it's worse than that. It's worse than that. Insane. It's not even it's stupid. Insane. It's such a middle finger to New York.
You know what? How about you read the decision? A middle finger to New York? I got to tell you what the Supreme Court said about New York. And they said, listen, the truth is that you can't say, and it's right here, nothing in the Second Amendment's text draws a home public distinction with respect to the right to keep and bear arms. And I love this, and Mayor Adams, listen up, and Governor Hochul and all those New Yorkers. That said, this is the court speaking, respondents' attempts to characterize New York's proper cause requirement, that means you got to give a reason where you think you might be attacked, as a sensitive place lacks merit. Because there is no historical basis for New York to effectively declare the island of Manhattan a sensitive place simply because it's crowded and protected generally by the NYPD. Hear that, Mayor Adams? Maybe you ought to stop criticizing the Supreme Court, and maybe you ought to deal with the cashless bail that allows everyone who's got a gun, the illegal guns that are on the street, you let them out as soon as you arrest them. Now law-abiding citizens in New York and around the country can carry guns. And it's about time that the law-abiding citizens of this country have the right to bear arms. I'm sick of criminals getting guns and the liberals letting them out so they can get another gun and kill another person. You don't have the right. You've lost your right to complain about guns when you come out and say, you know, we're going to let them out of jail, okay, because we don't want to keep them in jail. You're letting them out of jail for them to get another illegal gun. It's time we recognize that guns are an important part of the tradition of this country, according to the Supreme Court, and maybe people who are law-abiding citizens ought to have them. I'm tired of just the criminals having them. And that's my opening statement here on the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Welcome back to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Joining us now is a man who's got incredible experience in the years of professional security in both public and private sectors. Wayne Black, for more than a decade, was the security advisor and PSD lead for former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. He routinely details threat assessments for schools, churches, synagogues, hospitals, and other facilities. He's personally supervised protection details and special threat assessments in the U.S., Central Asia, the Middle East, Africa, Europe, and South America. And as a contractor for the Department of Homeland Security after the events of 9/11, he supervised a red team conducting threat assessments at designated national security events. This guy doesn't just talk the talk, folks. He walks the walk. His name is Wayne Black, and I want to welcome him to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Wayne, I got to tell you that more than ever, we need people like you on the national scene talking to Americans about what needs to be done to protect not just American citizens, but to protect our children in schools. So let's start with Uvalde and what happened there. And we all understand the fog of war. We all understand what happens when immediately after a traumatic event and things get a little mixed up. But it sounds to me like things were totally screwed up in Uvalde, Texas, where 19 children were shot and two teachers as well. Talk to me, Wayne.
Judge, I'm happy to be here. It was just a failure at so many levels, failure of planning and everything else. I mean, the fact that we're now learning that the room where most of the children were killed was unable to be locked, it just says it all. I mean, the whole purpose of school police or anyone that does an assessment, apparently they did not, is to make sure that something happens, to plan for the when, not the if. And yes. So that was the start of it. And then, of course, the failure to go in. I mean, the only people they detained were parents trying to rescue their own children in 75 minutes, Judge, as you know, it took to get in there.
You know, I got to tell you, folks, Wayne Black has written an article on the Uvalde school shooting. He says it was a failure of leadership, not gun laws. And is it in the Federalist? Is that where it is, Wayne? I'm reading it online.
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Okay, well, I would recommend to all my listeners that you read it. I mean, it is very clear. It's very concise. But, you know, Wayne, you and I understand that when there's a shooting, you go toward the shooting, especially when children are involved. You've got these school resource officers. And I must tell you, I've known many of them in my career. And you know, some of them really take their job seriously. Some of them are retired detectives who decided, you know what, I want to stay in law enforcement, but I don't want to have the day in, day out shooting stabbings. But some of them are also, they just kind of see it as a retirement. They're out of shape. You know, they don't take things seriously. And I got to tell you, this Pete Abbandando, he strikes me as a guy who, you know, was on the donut brigade and there's not much else going on. And the lies that were perpetrated saying they were looking for a key for 70 minutes when the door wasn't even locked and it wasn't even capable of being locked, it would infuriate any parent. And parents actually being handcuffed who are trying to go into the school to get their children out. What is the obligation? You're in a hallway. You hear children crying, screaming. You know they're bleeding out. You know they've been shot. You know that seconds count, not minutes, seconds count. And you've got some bozo out there who doesn't know what he's doing. Do you break the chain of command? What do you do, Wayne, in a situation like this? If you're in the hallway, you're a cop, you got a gun, you got a body shield. Talk to me.
Well, Judge, you go in. You absolutely have to go in. It's like, do you obey an unlawful order? First, I'm not sure he was there at the very beginning, but the first officer needs to push through. And it boils down to this, Judge. If you don't want to do this, if you haven't planned to do this, then you should sell car insurance or something. If you put the badge on, that's your obligation with a school, especially to go in and rescue the kids.
And in your article, you specifically say, after receiving grazing gunshot wounds from the Uvalde gunmen, the Uvalde police showed rank cowardice and retreated. So we're talking about the school police or the town police? Who are we talking about there?
Well, both. I think the first batch of police were there at the school were school police. But again, there was no plan. At the first sound of gunfire, the teacher should have known, should have been trained by the school police to lock their doors. And the school police should have done an assessment to know that all doors lock. Here's what I'm worried about, Judge. I think when it shakes out that if anyone did fire back at this guy, if they were grazed, that I wonder if there's going to be friendly fire. I wonder if we call it pray and spray, which is a negligent way to fire. I wonder if ballistics will show that some of the officers that did fire actually hurt children.
Interesting. You know, they've got and that is a frightening, frightening thought. But you've got the Texas Department of Public Safety, the state police, so to speak, the Texas Rangers. I'm not sure what they're called, but it's a state law enforcement agency. They've been incredibly critical of the local school police, saying that it was an abject failure. I mean, can we expect that kind of assessment by the state of the school police is in some way that they know what you're talking about when you talk about the friendly fire?
I think that's right. I mean, I hope so. But like Parkland, Judge, it's only going to shake out in terms of the details in civil actions, I predict. I mean, we learned more in Parkland in the civil cases than we did really from the beginning, from the evidence. So it's just couldn't be more ugly. When you think of the amount of officers were there and they fell into groupthink, and to have this police chief now say he didn't consider himself to be the incident commander. I mean, he's the de facto incident commander when he arrives. Even, you know, he even came without a radio, for God's sakes.
Yeah, and it is amazing. I mean, you always have someone who is, you know, the commander, who is the leader in charge. And for this guy to not even, you know, designate, you know, this is going to be where we're going to make our decisions. You know, we're going to bring in a unified front here, because you've got other agencies coming. And you've got border, they call him Bortek, who was a Border Patrol officer who was, I guess, from with SWAT, who grabbed a gun at the barber shop and decided to go in himself and shoot the shooter. I don't know if that ever turned out to be the case. Is that true, Wayne? Do you know?
Well, that's what we're hearing. It's still being reported. Then there's the story of the local police officer whose wife's a school teacher. She called him, but later died on the way to the hospital. He was disarmed by someone, I think by the school police. He wanted to go in. And he was detained and disarmed and not allowed to go in and rescue the children and his wife.
You know, and I admire you for, you know, the way you look at it. You're looking at this very factually, and I'm editorializing and saying this is outrageous. I mean, if your wife is in that school, I mean, nothing could stop me other than the local police putting cuffs on me from going into that school myself. And there is a mother that reports are who was cuffed by the local police, who then apparently, and I don't know if this turned out to be the case, was able to get the to convince them that she wasn't going to do anything, back off, and then run around the school and grab her kids, whether that's true or not. But, you know, what do we do now? We harden the schools. What else do we need to do, Wayne Black?
Well, in states like Florida, for example, Governor DeSantis has this assessment tool that he sends out to all public schools through the Department of Education and requires them to do an assessment, fill out the tool, the online tool, and report back to them. And it has things like door locks, planning, lockdown drills, et cetera. And so they're all over it. Every state needs to do that. Private schools are so far ahead, Judge, of the other schools, because they just do it. They don't have a board to worry about. I mean, mm-hmm. Think of the natural conflict. You know this better than anybody. This police chief is elected to the school board. Mm-hmm. So he has a conflict. He's supposed to be telling the school board what they need to do, and yet he's being paid to be on the school board.
Interesting. That is a conflict. That is an out-and-out conflict of interest. But, you know, that's sometimes what happens in situations where people just think it can't happen to them, it can never be a problem. And you're right, Wayne Black, the private schools certainly have this together. You know who else has it together? When you've got some of the churches and some of the synagogues, you know, that are used to being attacked. I mean, they've got a game plan, and yet we've got our most precious, you know, resources, children, and we don't really have a game plan other than, you know, a bunch of cops, some of whom have no idea whether or not they're even in charge, don't even know whether to go toward the gunfire, and stand in outside a building for 77 minutes and fight with parents whose kids are dying on the inside. I can't imagine what the screams are like. I can't imagine what the 911 calls are going to reveal in terms of the pain of these kids. A little girl covering herself in blood at the Uvalde school to convince the shooter that she was dead. It was her girlfriend's blood. I mean, this is craziness. This guy Abbondondo, not only should he be fired, there's got to be something, some kind of dereliction of duty, Wayne Black, that he's got to suffer, because people died because he was incompetent and he didn't do his job. And if you're going to take on a job, you have to be accountable.
I think that's right. I don't know how those guys live with themselves, judges, even the first one or two or up to 20 people. If you're, let's say you're number 20, 21 that arrives, and everybody else is standing around looking stupid, you've got to go in and engage. And how about this? The police were breaking windows to get children out of other classrooms. Why didn't they go to this classroom's window and take a shot or two at this guy who is 2 feet taller than anybody else in the classroom? That would have drawn his attention. They probably could have shot him. Those were not hurricane windows. They could have, if they had any training at all, it was like a 10-foot shot with a pistol. They could have taken him out at the time.
You know what? I must tell you, Wayne Black, you are certainly knowledgeable about this. I think everybody ought to take a look at Wayne Black's article in The Federalist. The Uvalde school shooting was a failure of leadership, not gun laws, by Wayne Black. My friend, you do great work. Thank you so much.
Church.
And born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. Welcome back to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. Joining us now is a member of the United States House of Representatives. Her name is Congresswoman Claudia Tenney. And I want to start with the Supreme Court decision this week where Justice Clarence Thomas pretty much said, hey, everybody, back off. The Second Amendment is clear. Then you've got the right to exercise your constitutional right, and it doesn't require an individual to demonstrate to some government official a special need to have it. What is your reaction to that decision?
This is a really important case, and Justice Thomas's decision is very simple, but it's brilliant in its simplicity, and it really spells out and talks about the fact that the Second Amendment right we have is pre-existing. It is the right to keep and bear arms, and it shall not be infringed. And he says this very clearly. The Second Amendment is should be looked at the plain language of it. We need to recognize that this is not a second-class right. That was a quote out of what Justice Thomas wrote.
Right.
And what's critical about it is the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association brought this along with two residents from New York who were concerned about growing crime in their neighborhoods and in their city and their communities. They went to seek to get a concealed carry permit, and they were denied that because they did not show a special purpose or an additional need for having an unrestricted right to carry to defend themselves. And that's what this case is all about, the fact that these jurisdictions in New York were able to shut down people who had legitimate rights for self-defense, which is the foundational right of the Second Amendment, to carry outside their home, which is what distinguished it from the last big case, the Heller case, which said we had the right to carry it in the home. But what's interesting, Thomas goes on to say, look, we have two parts of this right. If you have the right to keep arms, you have the right to bear them, not just in your home, but to bear them out in public,
right,
where you would need to defend yourself. So it's really a simple, critical decision that gives, you know, doesn't end the right of a jurisdiction, for example, to go through the permitting process, but it prevents them from being able to restrict license holders who want to protect themselves outside the home.
Let's talk about you and Congress and the bill that was before you guys this week on gun laws. Talk to us.
Yeah, there's a bill that's winding its way to the House. It was passed by the Senate. Unfortunately, there were 15 Republicans who voted on it. We did not get a real chance to read the text or really to look at what the problems are that are causing the violence, the mental health issues that I've heard you cite and others cite, many of the issues that they needed to see and hear from experts in the deliberative process before we throw a bill on the floor with a knee-jerk reaction to gun violence. And it's interesting, Justice Alito even mentions in this now famous case, in his concurrence to Justice Thomas, that the Buffalo shooting, the violence in Rochester, the violence in New York City, all of this has happened under the current laws. The SAFE Act, one of the most onerous gun control bills in the nation, and this is still happening. So it's unfortunate that they didn't look at the all of the above approach. And as a New Yorker, I live in rural upstate New York, and we have the highest crime rate that I remember in my lifetime. We've emptied our prisons. We've emptied our psychiatric centers where people who are a harm to themselves and others are in unrestricted environments. They are causing problems, committing crimes, and really unable to sustain themselves. The naive view of the Democrats, and unfortunately some of these Republicans, didn't go through and do the deliberative process. Interesting that 13 out of the 15 Republicans that supported this bill last night are not running for re-election. But I will be voting no because I don't think this is going to solve the problem. I don't think it's going to minimize gun safety. And what you alluded to earlier on your interview on the 5, do you feel safer? Yes, because I know law-abiding gun owners are protected now. They have the right. This is not against law-abiding gun owners. We're protecting them. We're actually asking people, you're a DA, former DA, we need to enforce gun violations. People are carrying illegally. This is saying, you know, some criminal who's going to go out and commit a crime, and this is spelled out by Alito as well in his concurrence, isn't going to go say, oh, geez, now I got to go through the permitting process. They're going to use an illegal gun. That law is still going to be out there.
Right.
Great common sense coming from our justices with clarity, with brilliance about the importance of our fundamental rights.
But Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, we are on a personal level. I'm very proud of you, and we're thrilled to have you on the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. Thanks for joining us. Joining us now is the famous Bill O'Reilly, who is a friend of mine, someone I have known for many, many years, who is a success in terms of everything he's ever done in his life. He's probably the most successful person in cable news ever in history. But even more interesting to me is that this man who has been able to capture the attention of the American viewing audience has been able to capture their minds also with his book. He has a myriad of books. I don't know how many. It's always about killing somebody. And his latest book is Killing the Killers. It is number one. No surprise. Killing the Killers, of course, is a detailed description of taking down some of the most outrageous terrorists in the recent years. And I am proud to bring Bill O'Reilly on to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Judge. I'm good, and I know you are. Watch you all the time on the top-rated Fox show, The Five.
Yeah, thank you.
And listen to you on WABC every Sunday, so thanks for having me in.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. Bill, the book, Killing the Killers, is fascinating. I mean, it just grips you. And I think the American people are hungry today for the truth more than ever. We have been bombarded with fake news, with false narratives, and people don't know who to believe anymore. And yet your books have been incredibly successful. I mean, they just are off the charts. Your books are, I mean, they're a success within hours of their even, you know, being printed and published. So why do you think that is, Bill, before we get into this particular book, Killing the Killers?
Well, we've had 17 number one bestsellers, which is a record on the planet, nonfiction. Nobody's ever had that many. And it's because I write in a style that puts the reader right there. So whether it's Abraham Lincoln or Patton or any of the other 11 killing books, the reader is there witnessing what we are writing about. Now, in Killing the Killers, this is ongoing history. First book that is contemporized. Mm-hmm. That means happening every day. And it's the best reporting I've ever done in my career. And the reason is I had to convince national security advisors going all the way back to the Bush administration to tell me what exactly happened in tracking and killing the terror leaders. And most of what is in Killing the Killers is classified information. So they trusted me to get it out to the American people. All of the national security advisors wanted the people to know what is being done in their name to protect them and to avenge this terrible evil, the scourge that has brought pain to so many Americans.
You know, Bill O'Reilly, it is amazing, though, that you hear so many reports of individuals writing books and, you know, the Department of Defense, you know, stopping those books because information in those books is classified. And yet you, for the reasons stated, were given the opportunity to share classified information. So they trusted you. Did they have to go over what you had written in order to give you approval? That's not an easy thing to get, Bill.
No, I didn't go through regular channels. I went to the people themselves directly. So I said, look, we're not going to quote you, and we don't. We won't use your names, we don't. But I need you to tell me what happened. So once they told me what happened, Jeanine, I verified it with other people who were there. We just don't print stuff. We just don't throw it out like everybody else does.
Right,
and, you
right.
And it's ironic. Talking to you with the Tunnel to Towers Foundation sponsoring your program, because this is the essence of the book. I dedicate the book to the Kaleo family who live in my town on Long Island, who lost two sons, and they were husbands, they were fathers, at the World Trade Center.
Yes.
So I saw myself, because they're friends of mine, the unbelievable pain that these terrorists caused. And I personalized that to an extent where anybody reading Killing the Killers is going to know, A, evil exists, and B, evil has to be destroyed. Not talked about, not compromised with, destroyed. And the weaponry that the United States has, Americans are not aware of this. So Trump spent $1.4 trillion upgrading the military. Well, what does that mean? Nobody knows what that means. Much of that money was in the development and deployment of space weapons. And when you see how Soleimani, the head of the Revolutionary Guard in Iran, was taken off this earth by U.S. technology, you're going to be aghast at how powerful these weapons are. And Americans have no clue.
Bill O'Reilly, that's the shame of it all, that, you know, we're just kind of told, well, you know what, they took down Soleimani or Abubakar al-Baghdadi or even bin Laden, but we really don't know. And Americans kind of feel left out. The fact that you have access to this incredibly specific information, classified information. And I tell you, and I tell my listeners right now, you are in the middle of the decision making when you read Bill's books. I mean, it is stellar what you're able to do. And yet you talk about the differences between the presidents, you know, under Obama with bin Laden, you know, the decision to kill, and under Trump, Abubakar al-Baghdadi. And then Biden, the withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Yeah,
I mean, you actually talk about the presidents and their thinking and their, you know, how they approach this. Talk to me about that.
All right. No politics in the book. Number one, there aren't any politics in any of the killing books. All right. So there are 11 killing books on the market, 19 million copies of my books in print. There are no politics in the book. It's all facts. And it's fascinating because I'll give you an example. When Barack Obama took over, he was not a terror warrior. All right. He wasn't committed to the assassination of these heinous people. Now, under the Patriot Act, which is very controversial when it was passed 6 weeks after 9/11 back in 2001, the United States has the authority, the legal authority, to attack terror groups when they are designated as such. Well, Obama came in and he was like this and that, but he got embarrassed because when he pulled all the U.S. troops out of Iraq, ISIS took over half the country and murdered tens of thousands of people. And that was directly because of Obama's action to withdraw American forces. So Obama turned to a fairly ferocious terror warrior. In fact, he launched almost 2,000 drones. And again, nobody knows this because when they launch a drone, it's not reported. There are no reporters there, and it's immediately classified. Right now, we have ground troops in Africa, special forces, fighting ISIS and Boko Haram. Nobody knows that. But we put you in Africa in a firefight, show you how hellacious this fighting is, but nobody knows. Now you will when you're re-killing the killers. But to get back to your original question, Bush, of course, was a terror warrior and a fierce one, but he got caught up in this nation-building stuff that hurt the country.
Yes.
All right? Obama
yes.
takes over, not convinced, but then gets embarrassed. Then he becomes a terror warrior. From the jump, Trump was in, and Trump was very effective because he didn't micromanage the CIA and the NSA, let them do what they had to do, and he signed off when they said, we got to wax this guy. Trump said, go get him.
You know,
there wasn't a lot of meeting and debate, and there wasn't a lot of that. Where Obama always did the big cabinet, you know, everybody knows that Biden dissented on going after Osama bin Laden. That's how we opened the book, the bin Laden raid. We closed the book with Biden's unbelievable botch in Afghanistan, far worse than has been reported. And when you read it, you'll know how bad.
See, I didn't get to the end of the book, Bill. I mean, now you piqued my interest again. I mean, I'm partway through it, and I can't wait to read it. I mean, folks, it's a great read.
Well, I know you're busy, Janine. Yeah, you're busy, but here's what you do. When you're not talking on the five, you read the book. So when Gutfeld's saying some stuff, you don't have to listen to him.
Okay.
You just pick the book up and read it.
All right. You know what? I'll tell you what I'll do. The next time I'm on the five and I'm taping two shows today, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to put your book in front of my face. I'll show Greg Gutfeld. Bill O'Reilly, it's always great to talk with you. We're so happy to have had you on the show. Everybody, Killing the Killers, it's a great book for Father's Day. If you missed it, you know, you can still go on Amazon and tell your dad it's coming in the mail. So, Bill O'Reilly, thanks so much for joining us. Killing the Killers, one of the best books you'll ever read, I guarantee it. Thanks, Bill O'Reilly. Take care.
Okay, Judge, thanks for having me in.
Welcome back to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. On 9/11, we vowed to never forget. Help America keep that promise. Donate $11 a month to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation at t2t.org. That's t2t.org. Okay, now it's time for me to gavel out with my closing argument. All right, it was a very eventful week this week, but the most significant thing that happened was the Supreme Court of the United States in a 6-3 decision affirming what they call an enduring American tradition that permits public carry of guns. And the Supreme Court's decision in New York Rifle Association against Bruin is a decision that is one of the most significant decisions, along with McDonald and Heller, and the most significant certainly in the last 10 years. As we've been saying, it guarantees the Second Amendment that was written clearly and unmistakably allows people to bear arms. Clearly, the right to bear arms means the right to carry them, not to look at them in your home. And this is significant. And the fact that in New York, they tried to add a second test in addition to a permit showing why you really needed to carry one with you was struck down in a very full-throated defense by of the Second Amendment by Justice Clarence Thomas. You know, what is going on in our country today is very unusual. Crime is higher than it's been in 30 years. And crime is higher because criminals are not being detained. They're not being held. They're being released back into the community. Whether it's in Los Angeles with that DA, George Gascon, who's up for recall in November, letting out a gangbanger last week, who should have been a third felony offender. He had two felony convictions, two prison stints as a career criminal with a record a mile long, and George Gascon lets him out even though he was arrested with a gun. And this is what the left does, folks. The illegal gun owners like this guy that George Gascon let out of jail goes out, starts beating his girlfriend, and shoots and kills two police officers, ambushes them. And George Gascon, the DA out in LA, said, oh, there was nothing violent in his background. I'm telling you, folks, they're lying to you. And I do not want you to have to be the victim of a crime, God forbid, or watch a family member or a friend victimized because of the lies that are being perpetrated by the left. Make no mistake, these are lies. When the district attorney, George Gascon, and it almost offends me to call Gascon a district attorney, having been one myself, when he says this guy was not a violent man, he was a gangbanger who served two state prison terms with a record a mile long, who ended up killing two police officers who were simply doing their job. He ambushed them. This is what has come down to in America, where the progressive left, and I don't know why they're called progressive, they are regressive. Nothing in what they do is progressive. The only thing that they're progressing is violent crime in America. And we are the victims. We are the ones that are not being heard. We are the middle class that is being squeezed. We are the people who are being forced to pay $5, $6, $7 for a gallon of gas, with a president who's telling us, you know, it isn't that bad and it's Putin's fault. And I want to tell you real fast, and I'm going to diverge for a minute. It's not Putin's fault. Even his own Fed chair said it wasn't Putin's fault. And I ask you, if we get 51% of our gas from Canada, 8% from Mexico, and we used to get 8% from Russia, and then we cut back on it, Russia's giving us a buying of oil from Russia is not going to change things. It was only 8% to begin with, and now it's much less than that. They're lying to you. They're lying to you at every turn. And so as the left melts down with this decision by the United States Supreme Court, which was as clear a decision as I've read in a long time, where they basically say it's, you know, this is a right that shall not be infringed. And it is simple. It is direct. It is plain language. It is a brilliant decision. And it reminds Americans of what the founding fathers intended, what they specifically allowed. And as the left allows the criminals to run free, and we are being told that we can't get legal guns after we apply for them and put ourselves on record as having them, it's a mess out there. It is a mess. The left is creating a mess in this country. And they can complain all they want. But the truth is, I think that in November, we're going to see a different situation where the hopefully red wave will take place in the House and hopefully will gain some seats in the Senate. It is too painful. Living should not be this difficult for the people in the greatest country on earth. And no matter how they try, they are not going to destroy this country. There are rights that we have. Rights that are God-given rights. They are natural rights. They are enshrined in the Constitution, and the left cannot take them away from us. And as the left threatens a night of rage, if the Roe versus Wade decision comes out and threatens to be violent, we have to go in and beg to have a gun and apply and comply with all kinds of tests when it's a constitutional right. It's backwards, folks. So it's up to you to change everything in November. So I can't believe we're out of time already. I want you to make sure you join us right back here next week. The Roe versus Wade decision should be out by next week. Join us same time, same place for the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. Have a great day, everyone. Be safe. God bless. Have a great day. Bye.